Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd here live from the Kintech Studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. This hour of Canucks Talk brought to you by Rack Steel. Rack Steel offers industry-leading heli forklifts and engineered racking solutions. Visit them online at racksteel.com. Brendan Batchelor, voice of the Canucks here on Sportsnet 650, joins me now. Batch, what's going on, man?
Not much. How are you, Jamie?
I'm doing well. From a play-by-play perspective, what was the adjustment from watching the Four Nations to calling those two games over the weekend?
Well, I mean, calling the Four Nations would have been a challenge just because of how quick everything was. So, you know, certainly the pace of play was not the same over the two games over the weekend. And that's to be expected when you've got, you know, some of the best players in the world all playing together in that same tournament and you go back to regular season play. So, you know, I wasn't entirely surprised by that, but I'm sure a frustrating weekend for the Canucks with only two goals in two games and no points to show for it in the standings.
Yeah, you mentioned the two goals in two games, and even going back to before the Four Nations break, since Quinn Hughes left the lineup, it's 11 goals in six games for the Canucks. So, you're really getting a sense of just how important Quinn Hughes is to floating the offense of this team. And just over the games in the weekend, what kind of stood out to you when it comes to the lack of offensive production for the Canucks?
Well, ultimately, when guys aren't producing or when a team isn't producing, you have to look at their top players, right? Because as much as you're right, Quinn Hughes is an offensive catalyst for this team, there are other guys that should be able to be that as well. And, you know, Jake DeBrusk scored a couple of goals. You know, we know he's been a streaky scorer, but you can't really criticize him because he scored in both of those games. But I'm looking at Brock Besser. I'm looking at Elias Pettersson. I'm looking at some of these other guys that we know are capable of putting the puck in the net, guys that play on the power play as well. Even a guy like Connor Garland, we know he's capable of scoring. He's been quieter in recent weeks because ultimately, you know, I think when some of these guys were struggling earlier in the year, the Canucks got some great secondary scoring from guys like Suter and Sherwood, and that sort of carried them through. But ultimately, if your top players don't produce, you're going to be found out eventually. And, you know, it's certainly more noticeable when Hughes isn't in the lineup because, you know, everything he touches turns to gold when he's out there. And he doesn't just create offense himself, but he creates it for his teammates. And some of that secondary scoring we saw early in the season was a direct result of Hughes and the impact that he has on the game. But ultimately, you know, your top players are going to miss time, and it can't just be a, oh, well, we can't score when Quinn's out of the lineup kind of situation, because when you get into the playoffs or into key games late in the year and teams are matching up and trying to take your top players out of the game, other guys have to be able to respond. And, you know, it's the guys right now that are supposed to be top players and top producers that I look at and say there needs to be more from them in terms of a bottom line. It can't just all be about Quinn Hughes.
Yeah, and even, you know, guys at the top of the lineup, and we'll put Elias Pettersson aside right now, but, I think of Brock Besser and Jake DeBrusk as kind of highly paid forwards. But even those players, I said earlier in the show, like, they're complementary players fundamentally, really good complementary players, but they don't have guys to complement right now. And that, you know what I mean? Like, it's just there's nobody there who can create for their teammates consistently, who can create open looks for Brock Besser. And, you know, I get it. Look, would you love for a guy like Brock Besser, who scored 40 goals last year, to be able to, you know, really step up in Quinn Hughes' absence and post JT Miller trade and take on more of that role? But I also think if you're we've never really seen that from Besser. He is what he is as a player. And if you're expecting that from him, you're kind of going to be disappointed. So as much as I think it's fair to point to, well, all the other guys got to step up and, you know, especially the guys at the top of the lineup, I just also don't know if they have like the horses to be a good offensive team with some of the roster changes and with Pettersson playing like he is.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Although the only thing I would push back on is to say that you could be more dangerous on the power play as a
that's
guy
fair.
Like Besser, because
yep.
you're going to get those looks and you've got to bear down on them. And that's what Rick Tocchet has sort of been railing against for a while now. You know, obviously it was more in the spotlight after the game last night, but the fact that they don't hit the net when they do get chances, and what was it, 30 plus attempts that were either blocked or missed the net. Like, you know, a guy like Brock Besser has the ability to get the puck through on net. A guy like Elias Pettersson, when he's playing well, has the ability to get the puck through on net and at least test the goaltender. And if you do that, then maybe you don't score, but hey, maybe there's a rebound for your buddy sitting at the side of the net, or maybe you can create a bit of a scramble, or you know what? Maybe it does go in if it's deflected and the goaltender doesn't get a good look at it if you have traffic in front. So not that the Canucks are going to turn into a high shot volume team overnight, because that's never what they've been under Rick Tocchet, and it's not what he wants them to be, because he's talked all the time about, you know, you concede possession if you take a low percentage shot and that doesn't help you. But when you have those looks, when you have those opportunities, get the puck to the net and actually hit the net. And if you do that, if you're a guy like Brock Besser, then more often than not, either you're going to have good chances to score, or there are going to be rebound opportunities and secondary offense that guys on your line can pick up. And, you know, to your point about not being or not having like those primary playmakers that could make guys around them better, you know, if you're missing that, then the way to cure that is pucks on net, bodies to the net, rebounds, traffic, tips, redirects. Like, you know, it's the oldest story in the book. That's how you generate offense in the NHL. And that's something that this team still could be doing, in spite of the fact that Hughes is out of the lineup, in spite of the fact that JT Miller's not here anymore, and they're just simply not doing it well enough right now.
So we talk about the lack of drivers, lack of playmakers, guys who can elevate their teammates. And of course, you know, we all know who is supposed to be filling that role up front for the team, and it's Elias Pettersson. And, you know, picks up an assist on the only goal yesterday, power play assist to Jake DeBrusk. Had some moments where he looked better, although, as I said in the first segment, that also feels like lowering the bar an awful lot. But then, you know, his performance late in the third period with the empty net pressing for the lead leaves a lot to be desired. Rick Tocchet talked about that after the game, how, you know, hesitant he is to shoot, how much you'd like to see him just rip the puck a few times. And then, of course, Elias Pettersson, you know, gives the quote to Ian McIntyre, is your confidence hurting or preventing you from performing, and says it's more annoying dealing with the media. So a lot to dig into with Elias Pettersson just from last night, Batch. What's your kind of just overall response to all of it, right? Like his performance, Tocchet's commentary, his comment to IMAC. What do you make of everything around Elias Pettersson from last night?
Well, I think what we're seeing right now is a player that is incredibly low on confidence. And we could sit here and debate or speculate about the reasons for that. I know people want to say he's banged up. Maybe that's a possibility. But ultimately, he had opportunities to get pucks to the net, and he had opportunities to shoot the puck. And he looked, I don't know if frightened's too strong a word, but certainly hesitant. Mm-hmm. To get the puck to the net. And we know what peak Elias Pettersson looks like, right? He's decisive. He reacts. He makes those plays. He takes those shots. And he does have an elite level shot that he can score on when those opportunities arise. But when he's low on confidence, and this doesn't just go back to, you know, the last calendar year, but even earlier in his career when he's had struggles, when he's not playing well, he's hesitating. He's overthinking. He's overhandling. And he's not being decisive. So on the ice, that's what I see from him. And, you know, again, we don't really know the reasons as to why that's occurring. But that's how it manifests itself on the ice. Anyway, in terms of Tocchet's, you know, analysis, I think it's pretty much spot on. Like, you want him to shoot the puck. You want him to move his feet. You want him to do the things that he's doing when he's an effective player. And ultimately, that's been a struggle for him for this season, one way or the other. And then, you know, the comment to Ian McIntyre, I just don't see how the media can be having such a big impact on Elias Pettersson right now. You know, there's all sorts of talk about how the coverage of this team is, you know, not what it used to be in terms of the number of people around the team. You know, I can tell you from being in that dressing room all the time, it's not like Elias Pettersson is called to the carpet and asked hard questions on a daily basis. So, you know, if he can't answer a question for me and McIntyre after a game where he struggled, then I don't know what to tell him about the next 7 years of this contract, because it's not going to get any easier if he can't turn his game around. And there is always going to be focus and speculation on him as long as he's a player on this team making north of $11 million. And ultimately, whether Pettersson likes that, whether people that follow this team like that or not, it's a part of the job, right? Like, you don't just sign that $11.6 million per year deal to play hockey and then go home and do nothing else. You're an ambassador for the team, for the organization, for the city. And a part of that responsibility is answering questions from the media, both in good times and in bad times. And that's something that, if Pettersson doesn't like that or wants that to go away, well, it's not going anywhere anytime soon. And he has to understand that and realize that that's a part of the commitment that he made to this organization, as well as the fact that the organization committed to him on an 8-year deal.
Yeah. And the key thing for me is that it's just such a fair question, it sounds like to me. You know what I mean? And I don't even mean just exactly how IMAC phrased it to him yesterday, but just in general, like, the question is, as I see it, what's going on? And I find it very odd and very confusing that from nobody, we haven't heard a real, like, in-depth explanation from Pettersson or from the team. And I get to a certain point, right? Like, hey, they're not going to come out and give you a detailed breakdown of all the things that have gone wrong or all the things they want him to improve. But just kind of like one theory, one explanation that would help us, that would help fans, that would help everyone kind of make sense of what we've seen for the last 12 months. We've really instead just had to kind of grasp at straws. And I think more than anything, maybe we'll get it after the season, right? Hey, there's 25 games left. Maybe we'll hear something after the season. But that's my biggest hang up right now is, like, can somebody just tell us what they think is going on? That's all I want to hear. It's a baffling mystery that has been front and center for 12 months for this team. And I think it's a reasonable question to want answered.
Yeah, it is. At the same time, I don't think the organization is obligated to answer it. And they may not even have the answers, right? Like, it's not like a situation like this where a former 100-point player kind of goes AWOL to a certain extent is going to be like a simple, well, this happened, so now he's not playing well. Like, I'm sure it's a multifaceted, complicated situation. But you know, I think for now anyway, those answers aren't coming. And the only way to stop those questions, if you're Elias Pettersson, is to play better and produce on the ice, right? Like, nobody's going to be asking you what's wrong if you scored a hat trick and led your team to a win, or, you know, if you made a key defensive play to help protect a lead late in the third period. And this comes back to, and this doesn't just apply to Pettersson, it applies to the team, it applies to what we've seen over the last few years. Play better and win, and the noise around the team gets quieter, the off-ice issues are less in the focus, and you can just focus on playing hockey and answering questions about hockey and not about the rest of it. But ultimately, the team hasn't performed to expectations this year. Pettersson himself hasn't performed to expectations this year. And in a hockey-mad city like Vancouver, you are going to have to answer questions about that. And, you know, ultimately, it's up to the organization and the player how much they want to divulge in terms of what may or may not be happening here. But the cure to all of it, one way or the other, is to play better and win hockey games. And that's what both Pettersson and this team need to get back to doing.
So the other interesting thing now with the Canucks is all of a sudden only 4 games before the trade deadline at the end of next week on March 7th. And they find themselves in this kind of interesting position. Obviously, one very, very high profile pending unrestricted free agent in Brock Besser. They're still right there in the playoff race. I mean, technically holding down a playoff spot over Calgary still, although it's basically a dead heat. They've got every opportunity to make the playoffs. It's also hard to see them with a chance to really go deep if they do get into the playoffs. I mean, are you at the point now where, like, let's take Brock Besser. I said in the first segment that to me, the idea of the own rental is kind of off the board. Like, either sign him or trade him, but the idea of passing on the opportunity to get those assets and him walking as an unrestricted free agent in the summer, that feels like a very, very tough sell at this point. Are you there at this point as well, Batch, with Brock Besser specifically?
Yeah, I think I am. And, you know, you're right that, like, the way this season is going to play out, like, they are still in a playoff hunt. So, you know, I can understand being hesitant to trade one of your most capable offensive players. But ultimately, I think you have to be willing to look at the medium and longer term as well. And that doesn't mean that you couldn't trade Besser and then use whatever assets you get for him to go out and get a player that, you know, can fill his spot on the team this year, or maybe going forward, a guy that has term on his deal, or maybe someone else that's a rental right now that you could extend and keep in the fold, so that, you know, you're not, you know, punting on your chances this year, or you're not perceived to be punting on your chances this year. I think that's maybe the most important way to describe it, because it's less about, you know, your team's ability to have success and more about the perception, right? And what kind of a message does it send to your fan base and to your dressing room if you trade a guy who was a 40-goal scorer and you don't do anything to replace him or to help a top-six group that, quite frankly, looks pretty thin right now anyway, even with him in the lineup. So, you know, I don't think you can afford to lose him for nothing. At the same time, I can understand that it might be a tough needle to thread to say, okay, we've got to trade one of our best players. What does that mean for this year? What does that mean going forward? I guess it sort of depends on what sort of value you might be able to get for Besser as well on the market, and how that will all play out. So, you know, it's not the easiest of situations, but ultimately I agree with you. I think if March 7th comes and goes and Brock Besser has not been traded, then the unless you have an unlikely at this point playoff run and have a ton of success in the postseason, and Besser's a big part of that, I think it would not be looked on well in this market if Besser remains with the team and then just walks into unrestricted free agency in July. So,
yeah,
you know, ultimately, whether that means they sign him to an extension, whether they can meet in the middle here, if it means they move on from him, if they do move on from him, could they go and get another player to fill that spot in the top six? You know, there's a lot of questions around this and not a lot of answers, but I think I was on with you guys 3 or 4 weeks ago. It was right before the JT Miller trade happened. Mm-hmm. And Dranser asked me what I thought the most likely thing to happen was before the trade deadline in terms of player movement. And at that point, I said I thought Brock Besser was most likely to be traded. And then like 2 days later, they traded JT Miller. So clearly, what do I know? But I tend to think that, you know, if there isn't a contract that's going to be signed out of the blue here, and I think that's still a possibility. This organization has done things like, you know, very quietly on a Friday in August, signed JT Miller to a long-term extension. So I'm not saying that, you know, the horse is out of the barn in terms of Besser not being with the team next year. But ultimately, I think the best way for them to manage this, in my opinion, is to trade him before the deadline if he's not going to be back.
Yeah, and I do wonder, you know, you look at now, it's very different, obviously, when you start discussing guys like Derek Forbortin, Noah Juulsen, but, you know, Victor Mancini comes out and makes his debut for the Canucks yesterday. I thought he played pretty well given his given the circumstances, and Elias Pettersson has performed, and all of a sudden it kind of feels like, okay, well, we have these young, at the very least, credible options on the blue line now. Makes it a lot easier to trade somebody like a Derek Forbort at the deadline, who's an unrestricted free agent. Again, very different conversation with Brock Besser, but, you know, I look at a player like Lekkomäki and what he's doing in Abbotsford, and is that how you try to thread the needle? You know what I'm saying, Batch, right? Okay, we trade Besser, but that gives us an opportunity to bring Lekkomäki up, and we know he's not going to just one-for-one replace what Besser's capable of doing, but at least it gives us another credible option that we can use and try to help us make the playoffs, and I wonder if that's kind of the middle road, is, hey, we finally actually have some young guys pushing for minutes that we feel good about playing. That gives us the freedom to make some of these proactive moves at the deadline.
Yeah, it could ultimately, although, you know, we know this management group and their MO from Pittsburgh was to slow cook guys, right?
Yeah.
Like let guys play in the AHL. And that feels like a lot of pressure and responsibility to put on Jonathan Lekkomäki to be the Brock Besser replacement. And, you know, I don't think that anybody would necessarily expect him to come in and be that player right away. But if you move on from Besser and you don't bring anyone else in and you call Lekkomäki up and you put him in the top six, then that is what is happening, whether the expectations are there or not. And if this team continues to struggle for offense down the stretch, then there will be criticism of that decision and potentially criticism of Lekkomäki as well. So, you know, I can see what you're saying, and it certainly is one path they could go down, but it's not a perfect scenario either. So, you know, there's so many moving parts here that I'll be really fascinated to see where this team sits in terms of personnel in terms of their decisions, either to sell or buy or have some sort of hybrid approach to the deadline. And ultimately, you know, this roster already looks a lot different than it did a month ago. And, you know, after the deadline, it could look very different even than it looks now. So interesting times to follow this team, and it'll be fascinating to see how this management group manages the deadline, what they do with Besser, what they do with some of these other players, the pending UFAs that you talk about, because I can't imagine they want to be in full-on sell mode.
No.
But at the same time, they haven't had a good enough year for you to say, okay, we're going out and buying like we did last year and bringing in players like Zadorov and Lindholm as pure rentals.
And I do think this management group, even you think back to like trading Luke Shen, right? And there was a lot of talk like, oh, should they try to bring him back? And you're kind of on maybe on the fringes of the playoff picture still. Like, they've tended to be pretty frank, I think, with themselves about, look, we got to move these guys. Now, Besser's in a different category. We'll see what happens there. But very difficult for me to see the logic of keeping him as the quote unquote own rental at this point. Batch, always good chatting with you, man. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having me. Have a good one.
That is Brendan Batchelor, voice of the Canucks here on Sportsnet 650. A few more minutes here before we take a break. Landon Ferraro will join me in studio for the final hour of the show. Speaking of trade deadline stuff, Sergio from Langley says, what are the odds on the Canucks packaging Vlander and Besser and picks for a center? Seems we now have the forward and defensive depth to do so. I would be pretty surprised if the team moves Tom Vlander in any combination with any sort of package around it for a center before the deadline, certainly. Now, as I started off the show by saying, you are missing these key offensive drivers at the top of your lineup in a big way. And if one of those becomes available and he's relatively young and hopefully has some term, right? You're definitely not doing it for a rental, obviously. But if somebody becomes available that has some term, or some team control, and you think they can be that legit top of the lineup playmaker, driver, offensive superstar type piece, then yeah, of course you have to consider putting Tom Vlander in the mix for a player like that. I don't see that player becoming available, certainly not before the deadline. We'll see what shakes out ahead of the draft. But I think that's the caliber of piece, not just a good player, not just a first line player. A player with true star level potential that you think can be one of the best forwards on a Stanley Cup winning team, right? One of the two or three best forwards on a Stanley Cup winning team. I think that's what it would take for the Canucks to start packaging Vlander and, you know, Besser and other guys for a deal. And I don't think that player is becoming available before the NHL trade deadline, and probably not before the draft either. Is there a possibility of more of, okay, we trade Besser and we got a guy who is 24. He hasn't really jumped out yet. We can get him because his production hasn't been there. We think he has more upside, like more like a Filip Hedl or something like that. That I could see. Again, someone with some team control attached to them. But the much more expensive package is difficult for me to see coming together before the trade deadline. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Jeff, the lumberjack from Langley, says, if Petey wants the pressure, then own it. Be better dealing with the media. And most importantly, perform offensively. I know Dan Riccio pointed out on Twitter, what, it was 24 days ago that Pettersson gave the quote to Murph after the Miller trade about the pressure now on him. And he said, you know what? I welcome it. I want it. Well, it's time to start showing that. It is time to start showing that with his performance on the ice and how he's presenting himself to the media as well. Can't find the latest episodes of your favorite HGTV, Discovery, and Food Network shows? Rogers Xfinity TV has the newest seasons of the top-rated shows on these popular channels, while other providers are no longer including them in their TV lineup. If your TV provider doesn't carry these channels, you're missing out on new seasons of Celebrity IOU, Hometown, Beat Bobby Flay, Expedition X, and more. Don't be fooled by other channels pretending to be these networks you know and love. Get the latest with Rogers Xfinity TV at Rogers.com. Landon Ferraro joins me in studio next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd here live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Going to give this one a miss, Dom. This one's not going to go in the rotation, the rejoiner music rotation. That's a big old,
we listen and we don't
that's
judge.
A big old thumbs down for me. Not feeling that one. Is that house music?
That one was anthemic deep house.
And then it, anthemic deep house. All right.
Not a deep house
Not
guy.
A deep house guy, apparently. All right. No Drance on the show today. He is traveling, covering the Canucks on the road trip. But as mentioned, now joining me in studio, a former NHL player, now analyst here on 650 on Sportsnet TV. He is Landon Ferraro. What's going on, man?
Nah, not too much. I mean, you're dressed to go to a rave right now, no? That's a nice striped sweater.
Would this be rave outfit
Maybe
appropriate?
Maybe it was cut up a little bit.
Yeah, less is more at a rave.
Yeah, I feel like this is too bulky. I feel like I'd be insanely hot if I was at a rave in this.
Probably.
I'd be just like sweating mountains of sweat, but I've never been to a rave, so I can't comment on that. Anyways, not exactly rave energy in the building for the Canucks in Utah last night, especially from the Canucks. And I made this joke to Batch as well, but like going from the Four Nations final and the high of that to the really quick turnaround, and a lot of teams played back-to-back games in the NHL this weekend, and then you get that performance from the Canucks. That was a bit of an adjustment, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was preseason hockey all over again. Yeah, across the league. Like the scores that were popping up. I mean, you have Washington put up two games with eight goals. Like, it's insane what was going on. But, you know, for the Canucks, it's, you know, they went into break looking like they all had found another step, and everything was a lot faster, and their attack looked, you know, quite a bit better than what it was. And then coming out of break, it just looked like all of a sudden they're skating uphill again. And not like it did, they had lost that, you know, I guess a post-trade bump a little bit, but like the same directness was not there. And then, of course, the penalty trouble on the back end through both games kind of takes away any chance.
Yeah, really. And it's the kind of thing, as you said, where you go into the break feeling pretty good, right? That win against the Leafs, and hey, even without Quinn Hughes, we've won through the last four, you know, team looks a lot faster. And then you come out of the break and you have these performances. And I think it's the kind of thing with the Canucks at this point. They've got 25 games remaining in the season. When you've been so up and down through the first 57 games, and it's been such a struggle to generate or like to keep any momentum going and turn it into a winning streak, turn a three good game stretch into a 13 good game stretch. You know what I mean? Like at this point of the season, it gets pretty hard for me to believe that they're going to find that. Is that fair? Like if we haven't already seen it all come together consistently for a month, should we really be holding out hope that it is going to come together consistently for a month or more to end the season here?
I mean, not right now, no. I mean, the hardest part is it'd be one thing if they were losing games 6-4 and you're like, okay, like if they need to just clamp down defensively and, you know, they're getting enough scoring, so like they'll be fine. But the issue right now is there's zero pucks going into the net. Like mm-hmm. there's one goal going in. I forget the stat now, but I think it's 16 of the last 17. There've been three or fewer goals.
Yeah.
And I'm sure if you go back into the last 10 and look at that even more, it's probably two and less. So when you're playing like that, like you can't just all of a sudden find offense. Defensively, you can get more engaged, and you like, it's easier to clean up defensively than
sure.
it is to find offense and fine playmaking and confidence. So for the Canucks, like it's, they're in a tough spot right now. You have a lot of players that are not kind of playing to their level. And if you have a bunch doing it, then it starts creeping through everyone and it all just kind of starts snowballing. And that was the part before the break that was nice, was it felt like they kind of broke through that and that they found their way, and then they would have had a couple weeks to sit with it and be excited to come back and play. And then it just, you know, like it just wasn't there. And mentally, like they weren't ready to start the game out of the break, really.
Yeah. And that point about, you know, just how it's hard to like will your way to all of a sudden we're a really dangerous offensive team. And there's other, I'm sure there's things they could be doing that we can talk about. But, you know, when you have Elias Pettersson playing like he is and Quinn Hughes is out of the lineup, to me, you know, again, we'll talk about Elias Pettersson, so put him to the side. But all the other forwards, it's hard for me to like go down the list and criticize each guy. You know what I mean? Because, yeah, Brock Besser's never been the type of guy who, you know, elevates his line mates and drives a line. Jake DeBrusk has never been that guy. You know, Filip Hedl, maybe you think he can develop into that guy, but he's never really done it consistently. And it's kind of seems like they just, rather than, you know, oh, is it a coaching issue or is it, are the players not trying hard enough? Like, I just don't know if they have the guys to do it, to be a truly dangerous offensive team if Quinn Hughes is out of the lineup and Elias Pettersson is playing like this.
They're missing their drivers right now. You're right. Like for, you know, you look at Pettersson's line right now of Sherwood and DeBrusk, like Sherwood is a great energy guy that, you know, should not be, but is leading the team in even strength goals this year. Like that's an amazing season for him. And he's been an, you know, a great find and signing for this team. But if he's leading your team in even strength goals, like that's already a big red flag. But then you look to the other side and it's Jake DeBrusk. Like he's a very good player that's, you know, he's got 20 goals again. And all of a sudden, you know, you're asking him to be the driver of the line. And that's just not his game. Like he is a finisher. He gets around the net and he's very good at that. But if you're asking him to create all the offense, it's just not, that's not in his toolbox. And that's not what they signed him to do either. But you go through everyone, you know, everyone up front, like you're asking them all to do things that they're not really prepared to do or have the skill set to do. And we've talked about it so much through this year, but you can have guys that step up at different points. Like, you know, Pugh Suter's had a great start to the year, especially, but, you know, he's been really solid. But if you're expecting him to be, you know, getting 2 points out of three games all the time, like, that's asking a lot. Yeah. Like he would be at a different pay grade if that's what he was producing on a regular basis. So again, like it's just, you need everyone to get back to their level. And that's, you know, I mean, we're just beating around the bush a bit, but like you're waiting on one guy. You can't have everyone trying to pull Pettersson along right now for what he's signed for and what he's shown in the past. Like he's the one that's supposed to be showing and pulling everyone else along, especially with Quinn Hughes out of the lineup.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I do think even, you know, you make a great point about like the Pugh Suters and the Kiefer Sherwoods. I mean, that's called secondary scoring. There has to be a primary scoring. You know, there has to be primary scoring for those guys to be generally secondary too. You can't be looking at like, well, they haven't, you know, he's only got one goal in 10 games. Like, yeah, that's secondary scoring. That's what secondary scorers are going to do for you sometimes. There's nothing wrong with that, but you don't have the level of primary scoring right now. When you find yourself in a position like that as a team where, okay, we don't have the guys who are going to break open the game and, you know, set up a backdoor tap in for another player or, you know, put the puck on a guy's stick in the right in the slot for a nice chance. We don't have that right now. We've still got a way to find ways to score goals. You know, we're in a playoff race. What do you have to do as a team to score goals, not in an elite rate, but just like at a credible rate when you don't have that super high end offensive talent in the lineup?
The Kiefer Sherwood assist the other night, 2 games ago, like cause a turnover as the other team's trying to break out, gets rimmed down, he wins a battle and throws it out front for DeBrusk to put it in. Like that doesn't take elite skill. That takes a lot of hard work and, you know, like obviously hockey IQ, like Sherwood's got to know that DeBrusk is back there and all those things. Like it's a very good hockey play, but really at the end of the day, like that is just work ethic. Mm-hmm. And they showed that before the break. And that's why I was so excited was it looked like they found, because you're right, like they don't have a game breaker. And for teams that don't, you need the whole committee to be doing it. And for that to work, like you need each line to be providing, you know, whether it's momentum or chances, and it's one wave after a next, and they were playing fast, they were hard on a forecheck, they're causing turnovers. Like that's how you can make it up. It's hard work. It's a bit of chaos in the offensive zone, and for the other team, like making them nervous that every time they're skating it up the ice, like you know that their D, the Canucks D are going to have a good gap. You know that the back checkers are coming. So, like, you got to make good plays or you're going to turn it over and they're going to come right back. Like, that's the part, and it looked like they had figured it out. And that's why I think the last two games have almost been a bit harsher, is because you were just shown again of what the team can look like when they move and be a bit more direct.
Well, I think so much of it is what we're kind of talking about is you want the team you're watching to have an identity. And the Canucks have struggled so much this year to build an identity. And then you're right. I think, okay, they trade Miller, and obviously you're not getting better by doing that, but you bring in Marcus Pettersson, and that solidifies your back end. And Hedl and O'Connor bring speed. And it felt like, okay, maybe we're seeing the new identity, which is exactly what you were just describing there. You don't have a game breaker offensively at forward, but you can do all these other things. And you'd hope, I mean, what, like Pettersson and Lankinen and Tocchet, to be fair, went to the Four Nations, but the rest of the team had, you know, four practices leading into this game, almost like a little mini training camp. You'd hope there'd be an opportunity to kind of reinforce that. Hey, guys, this is our winning formula. And instead, it looks completely absent almost over the weekend.
And not to give them an excuse, but I will say that taking a two-week break in the middle of the season when you're not used to it is very strange. Like, in European hockey, they take two breaks every season, one in November, one in February for international tournaments. And when I first got to Berlin, it was like 2 weeks later, and this break pops up, and I'm like, what is happening? And so you go on a vacation, you come back, you practice for the week, and you get back into that game, and it felt like, to me, all the work of, you know, the 20 games leading up to that was almost like all gone, and it was starting again, and you had to get your legs back under you, get your brain back into it. Like Tyler Myers' first period the other night was exactly that. Like, you could clearly tell he was trying hard. He was, you know, he was doing everything he normally does, but his brain wasn't quite in it yet, and he had too many penalties and puck over the glass. Like, those are mistakes of not being mentally into it. And he recovered and came back and played pretty good, because he is a good player and has been around a long time. But my point is, like, it's hard to come back from that. And you've seen a lot of teams struggle coming out of this break. Now, in saying that, it doesn't write off the fact of what you just said of, you know, they had four good practices. They're coming off of, you know, a big shakeup to their team. They've played well. Like, I would have expected them to have a lot more jump coming out. And if they would have lost both those games with bigger scores and just looked a little loose almost of defensively, but they were moving, that would have been better than what happened. Because at least then they're going, and it's just reining it in a little bit.
I think especially last night, Shelov's making his first NHL start in forever. You're kind of crossing your fingers, not knowing what to expect. And then he gives you that performance and every chance to be in that game, and you can't take advantage of it. Like, that's tough.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point of bringing him up, because it was, you know, not only his first start in a long time, but his past starts this year.
They were tough.
Like, tough is putting it nicely. Yeah. Like, he really, really struggled. But you read about him going back down to Abbotsford and really putting his work in. And, you know, I know Justin Pogge's down there as the goalie coach, and I know he does really good work as well, and would have been able to hopefully help him through some of that stuff. And he steps in last night, and, like, he played unreal. He had multiple big saves. Mm-hmm. He had, you know, the breakaway stop later in the game, you know, to keep them in it. Like, there's so many different parts. And again, like, that makes it hard, just like the night before with Lankinen. And, like, it's two very good wasted starts, you know, against one very good team and another one that, you know, was definitely in your wheelhouse of needing to get points out of that game.
So on the offense stuff as well, and, you know, Rick Tocchet speaks after the game, and the team obviously only had, I forget exactly what the number was on shots on goal, not very much in that game, but, you know, a lot that missed the net, a lot that are blocked as well. And Rick Tocchet spoke about a couple of things. One is just, you know, hitting the net. And then the other one is moving your feet to make sure you're opening up shooting lanes and not just settling for, you know, launching it into a guy's shin pads. From a shooter's perspective, I've always kind of been of two minds about the, like, missed shots thing. Because, yeah, it's extremely frustrating, of course, to be in really good areas and miss the net entirely. But I also always worry about, like, okay, if you're putting such a big emphasis on just hit the net, are you drastically reducing your chances of scoring on a shot as well from a good area? Like, there's something to be said for picking a corner at a certain point. As a shooter, how do you kind of strike that balance? And does it have to change if your team is struggling? You know what I mean? Like, do you have to just say, look, it might be frustrating, but I've got to spend a couple periods here just putting it on goal no matter what?
See, like, I think you're taking it a little too literal.
Okay.
In the sense of, like, he's not saying to close your eyes and shoot at the middle of the net and hope something good happens. Like, whenever I was scoring and, like, you know, I was a bit of a streaky guy, you know, especially in the American League when it would be more than a couple goals in a season. You know, like, when I was on and felt good, like, I'd literally, if I was going for high glove on a 2-on-1, like, I'm literally aiming at the entire corner, like, the whole quarter of the net. And, you know, I have a general idea of where that's going, but it's more just instinct, and I shoot it as hard as I can for that kind of sector of the net. When things aren't going right, I'm now trying to put it right at the goalie's elbow and bar down, essentially, because you're like, I need to be perfect because I don't feel it right now. And that's where you miss the net a ton. You end up just putting it into his stomach because you're trying so hard and things just don't work. Like, I believe what Talk is saying is, like, when you get into those areas, you need to just, like, you know, in a sense, like, put your head down and just pick whatever area you're going for and shoot it as hard as you can. It doesn't need to be perfect, doesn't need to be placement, because even if you miss that and it's, you know, it's a hard, good shot, the chances of the goalie giving up a rebound and someone else can be there and put a rebound in, like, all those things, like, you need to start helping yourself. And the easiest way to do that is taking volume shots. That doesn't mean 30 shots from the corner, but when you get into anywhere within, you know, the house, so, like, up the dots and across the tops of the circle, like, anytime you get your feet or stick in there, like, just know that it's going to the net. It makes it easier for your line mates. Now they know, okay, my guy's got a little bit to the middle, I need to get to the net because I know the shot's going. I'm not looking for the extra pass that multiple other guys had talked about in post game last night of, you know, we get into an area and we look for an extra pass. Well, what if that is just a shot on net and it bounces to the guy back door and he puts it in the empty net? You still get your assists. He still scores. It's good for the team. Like, it doesn't have to be pretty.
So is it almost like, I think you kind of mentioned it there, almost divide the net into, like, quadrants and just say, okay, and it's not about picking a spot or shooting at his crest, but just top left, that's where I'm shooting. That quarter of the net is where I'm going for.
I mean, like, that's how I always looked at, 'cause I felt like it took stress off my mind knowing that, like, if I just trust my skills that I've, you know, I've shot hundreds of pucks at practice, I've, you know, worked on reps, I've done all of this, that when I get into that situation, I just shoot it as hard as I can into the area that I want, and I trust my, you know, my hands and my ability to take over the rest. Like, you always hear guys talking about when they're really on a heater and they're like, I don't really know what's going on. Like, I go to make the pass that I tried making last week that was a turnover, and now it's a perfect play. That's just your ability being able to take over because your mind's free and you're not trying to be precise. You just do it.
Yeah, it's as you said, one of those things where it's like, I think even when you're in the moment, you can't explain it. You're just like, no, it's working.
Every once in a while, and you'll see it on guys' faces. Like, when you see a goal go in from a guy that doesn't score a ton and it's a like an absolute rocket of a wrister, if you look at their facial expression sometimes, like, you can see it on them of like, how did I do that? Like, I just shot it like 10 miles an hour faster.
Where the heck did that come from?
But it catches everyone, and it's the best feeling in the world.
That's awesome. And the other part of the equation from Talkit was the idea of moving your feet to open up the shooting lanes, right? And this, I think, was also kind of building on something he's talked about so much, which is the idea of holding on to pucks to making plays. And I think there's a connection here where it's not, don't just settle for, well, there's a guy right in front of me, but I got to get a shot on, so I'm going to shoot. Move your feet, try to get to a better position, and maybe you do have to make the extra pass, or maybe the things open up for you, whatever. Who knows what's going to happen? I know we've talked about this before, but it's so strange to me and surprising, I guess, how often the phrase, like, move your feet has come up for the Canucks this season, not just with Pettersson now, but kind of at a team-wide level. Again, from a shooter's perspective, you know your team is struggling to score. How does that part of it now enter into the equation when you've got the puck in the offensive zone?
Well, I'll start with, you know, like, I really think that when he's talking about moving your feet, like, essentially it goes back to, like, what your, you know, your coach is yelling at you in peewee mm-hmm. and bantam and all of, like, all the way through of, you know, even in the defensive zone, as soon as you get it on your tape, take a couple steps. And yes, that's to find a lane, but it's also, okay, like, you're even at practice, you're next in line, you have to make a pass to a guy swinging through, and you're stationary. That pass is harder than if you take a step and make it. Because just by taking that step, like, every, you know, every part of your body and your mind more engaged in what you're trying to do. So if you bring that into the offensive side, you know, the puck comes up to the point, and you see that guy coming at you. As soon as you make one step to the middle, well, you've now made the defensive player take a step, but he's reading off of you. Now, as soon as you burst back the other way, like, Quinn Hughes is a cheat code in how he does it, but what he's doing is essentially makes one guy cross over and transfer his weight, and as soon as he does, because he's quick, he jumps back the other way. But because of that, like, he's made the defensive player do something and move, and it might not work, but you might make him to move, and when he gets back into the lane, he's off by 3 inches. Well, now you've found your gap. But if you don't move off the hop, it is so easy for a defensive player coming out to a D to know where he is on the ice and be in the lane. Like, that, you could be off of playing for 10 years and go back in and know where your angle is to get to be, to front a puck. But as soon as you're made to move once or twice, like, now there's thought into it. Okay, is he going to go around me the first time, or is he going to cut back on me? And you just cheat back to the middle a little bit, and now you can just go around the outside. Like, all those, you just start opening up options. But not only that, but as soon as you move, you know, a couple feet to your right and let that shot go, you've now changed the angle of the puck. The goalie has to move. Well, if there's a screen in front and he's peeking around the right side of the person in front, and by moving, he now has to go to the left side. Well, he's lost sight of the puck for, you know, a half a second, maybe misses the release, and because of that, now he's not ready for it, right? Like, it's all a chain reaction, but you can't have all that happen without the first thing, which is move your feet. Like, you have to move your feet to get things to open up.
How frustrating is it, just from a team-wide level, going into the third period last night? And yeah, it's second half of back-to-back, but it is for Utah too, and it's a tie game, and you've got what, like, 8 shots? Like, you know what I mean? What, how frustrating is that for a team in that moment to just kind of see it and be like, man, it's just, we haven't been able to get it clicking at all tonight.
Honestly, like, I would imagine, like, it's a feeling of embarrassment, really. Like, there's no way you're sitting in that dressing room and thinking we're playing our best and it's just not going our way tonight, right? Like, there's enough really good leaders in that room and players that have proven to be solid team players here. And there's no way they're sitting there happy or, you know, trying to blow smoke up the rest of the team saying, hey guys, we got it here. We're, you know, we're coming. It's like, no, I'm sure that there was, you know, whether it's Tyler Myers or Bess or whoever it may be in that room of just, you know, having, you know, probably a pretty loud, but frank conversation of, like, this is nowhere near our level. This is nowhere near what the Vancouver Canucks play like and how we should be doing it. And, you know, they came out and had a better third, but it shouldn't take 40 minutes of kind of swinging around before you get moving.
And even that, it's 7 shots in the third period. You know what I mean? So you're right. It's like almost double the rate you were doing before, but it's like, still not what
you
want.
What are we comparing it to?
Right? not exactly what you want from a team in that situation.
It's just tough, right? Like, go to the very end of the game. The puck gets put down again. They bring it back up. And then it turns into pinball kind of at the tops of the circle.
Yep.
Was there anyone that stopped? Like, when they got the puck, you know, it ended up being with like 2 seconds left. But they get it in the middle and just kind of flip it back out. There wasn't anyone within 5 feet of that player anymore. Like, everyone just kept swinging.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, again, it's once you start going down the wrong path, it's easy to take the easy way out. And that is not stopping and starting or, you know, just being a bit more direct. But, like, you have to, you can't cheat the game. Even when it's, you know, you probably know there's 4 seconds. We don't even have time to get a shot off. But, like, there's a bouncing puck. Like, maybe you get it and just flick one at the net, and it takes a little foot dive on Vemelka in the net, and it goes in. Like, you never know, but you got to give your team a chance.
Yeah. All right. We have pointedly not talked to Elias Pettersson in this first segment, but we'll do it. We'll do it. Don't worry, after the break, because he's in the spotlight again for the Canucks. So that's coming up next. You can send your questions in as well, 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line, and we'll take a break. Final segment with Landon Ferraro in studio next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd joined in studio by Landon Ferraro here. Drance, he'll be back on the show tomorrow. He is, of course, traveling, covering the team right now. We're live from the Kintech studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their 3 locations to serve you, or online at DunbarLumber.com. Now, we won't spend the whole segment on it, but we do have to talk Elias Pettersson. We'll get into some other stuff. Don't worry. There's some, you know, young defensemen in the lineup. We can talk about that. We can do some other stuff. The deadline coming up, all of that. But look, I mean, he's Elias Pettersson. He's making 11.6. He is a big storyline, of course, still around this team. And they trade JT Miller. And, you know, I mentioned it earlier in the show, the intermission of that game against Dallas, he talks to Murph, or maybe it was post game. Anyways, he talks to Murph and says, yeah, I want the pressure. Since then, it's, you know, had that really nice game against the Leafs. But other than that, the performance just has not consistently been there with Elias Pettersson. And it really just looks the same as it has for a long time now. Last night, I thought it was interesting because there were some shifts early in the game where it felt like maybe he had a little bit more jump, maybe a little bit more creative, dynamic, dangerous attacking. And then you get into crunch time and it's 6-on-5 and the net is empty. And it looks like the same hesitation, the same lack of confidence from Elias Pettersson. What did you think about his game over the weekend, you know, last night in Utah, and just generally what he's shown post JT Miller trade?
You know, I just kind of, like we were talking about just the team in general, like there were pieces of his game that started, like, after the move was made and you know, the new guys come in that looked like, okay, like he's starting to make some strides here. Like he's starting to look a little quicker, look a little more engaged in what is going on the ice. And then last night, like, I agree. Like, I thought he had a good start. He makes, that's a really nice assist on DeBrusque's goal. And you see that and you're like, yeah, okay, like that makes sense. Like that's a play that he should be making. Like, that shouldn't be that hard for him either. Like, that's a very routine pass.
It shouldn't
for
be
him.
Notable. Yes, you know what I exactly. mean? And it's like, in years past for Elias Pettersson, that wouldn't be notable at all. It would just be like, oh yeah, he made a play.
The difference is when it was about to touch his tape in years past, you're already thinking as you're sitting on the couch, you're like, oh, this is in backdoor. Like, you know what's coming. And now you're like, is he going to throw it backdoor? Like, you just, like, you don't know. And honestly, like, I think it just goes to the way that he looks with the puck right now, it looks like he doesn't know what he wants to do with it. And, you know, that's a bit of a scary place for anyone in really any line of work. Like, could you imagine, you know, literally doing one thing your entire life and then all of a sudden you're like, I can't, like, I'm not doing the same, I'm not getting the same results. And I feel like I'm doing the same that I did before, and it's not working. And just the indecision with the puck, the, you know, the lack of attacking the middle, like that was a big thing that Talkett had mentioned before the break, of like, he wanted his players, but, you know, a lot of it was pointed to Petey as well, of like, it was the Colorado game because it was MacKinnon, and he's like, you know, when you watch MacKinnon, like when he sees any space on the interior, he's attacking it. And for Elias Pettersson right now, when he sees that space, even going to, you know, what was it, 30 seconds, 40 seconds left in the game, I believe it was Hronek one touched it right into the middle on him, and he ends up taking a shot after a couple seconds, but you can almost see him stop with the puck and be looking around to see if there's a play to be made. Just, you know, like, can that just be a hard shot? Like, mm-hmm. you be the guy to take it. And you know that you've got three guys down at the net, and maybe there's something there for it, but it's just, it's the indecision. And, you know, indecision is something that you see more in the bottom half of the lineup. Like, guys get a really good scoring chance, and sometimes, like, you have too much time that you're like, oh God, like, I need to make a play instead of just, like, kind of shooting it. And, but the, you know, one of the reasons, you know, on top of just skill level and hockey IQ or whatever things you want to throw into it, for the guys that are elite in the league, like, there's no indecision. Like, as soon as they get it, they know if they're shooting, they know if they're passing, it's on and off their tape. There's not an extra dust off,
yeah,
know, pre-shot. Where now, you know, flipping it to what we were talking about with the defense and moving their feet, like, as soon as you have that extra dust off, all you've done is given the defensive player coming at you and net front to shift over and get in the lane, and now that's a harder shot to get there. A weaker shot that is less accurate but gets off quick is better than a hard shot that you prep and now you've taken away shot lane. Like, if you beat the goalie to the far side because you get it off quick, does it count and it's fluttering into the net? Does it count the same as a hard shot that you, you know, have to really beat him because you've let him get over now? Like, there's a difference.
And when I think back to, like, the elite version of Elias Pettersson, you know, everyone focuses on kind of the absence of his the one-timer on the power play. And yeah, we don't see that very often. It's his attempts are way down. That's true. But, like, his wrist shot is such a weapon. And when he was at his best, it was one, either, as you said, like, very decisive and boom, on his tape, off his stick, and usually labeled for his spot. Or there were times when he would hesitate and wait, but it was always with a purpose. You know what I mean? It was because the defense was scrambling and the goalie was pushing wildly across crease, and he would wait and wait them all out and then have an open net. You know what? It was waiting for a purpose because he was processing and seeing the game faster than they were. Now it's waiting for no purpose. You know what I mean? It's waiting, but there's nothing opening up as a result of that. In fact, things are closing off, and it's just such a difference in how he's attacked the game. And it's one of the things that makes it hard for me to fully buy the, like, injury hypothesis here, right? That all of his struggles are a result of, you know, well, he got tendonitis last year and wasn't able to train over the summer, and that sapped his, you know, so his skating burst isn't there and all of that. Like, I'm sure there's something physical going on, but to me, does that change? Does that make you scared to shoot? You know what I mean? Like, I that's what I can't quite square when people are talking about the tendonitis and the knee stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, like, again, like, it's purely speculation, but if we're talking and it, you know, it ends up being that it is something with his knee, or, you know, it's something lower body and it is hindering him from really skating and having, you know, those, you know, higher speed bursts that, you know, all the stats show that he had in the past. Like, I can understand it, but at the same time, it's really no different than when a skilled player starts to get older. It gets into, you know, the back half of 30, and he doesn't move quite as well. Like, Joe Thornton didn't lose his playmaking.
Yeah.
Right? He would go stand in one spot, and, like, he would move maybe a foot and a half once he got a puck, and yet he'd find a lane, and he'd still make it work. Like, Elias Pettersson's skill level is still what it is. Like, he still has, there's no way that he's lost all of it. And
I certainly hope not. You wouldn't think so.
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't make any sense either.
And it doesn't, but, like, at the same time, like, you have to use what's there still. Like, I'd almost rather see him turning the puck over six times a game right now, trying to find his game. Like, if you're not going to produce, and right now it isn't there, like, start trying to make
just
plays,
like, be reckless, like, you know, like, what I mean? For, like, I know that sounds bad, you're not supposed to be reckless, but, like, it would feel, at least it would be different than the nothingness that we're getting right now.
But say he went three games of, like, you know what, every little play that I see there, I'm gonna make it. And if I turn it over and we get scored on, like, we're just going to have to live with that for right now. But say in those three games, he ends up making, you know, he even if he ended up being minus one out of the experiment, but he makes four really nice plays and he sees them happen, and like just seeing them getting completed, like maybe that's something that can kickstart him. I don't know. Like, I feel like we've discussed it for so long that that idea just popped into my head, because I feel like we've thrown out so many different things that, you know, maybe this could work, maybe that could work. And I know I've said this before, but like at the end of the day, like you have to create your own game. You have to create your own confidence. You're the only one that can make the outcome be like it should, right? Like you can have the best teammates in the world, but like they can't make you make a play. You have to internally decide that you're going to be that player again.
This text comes in unsigned. In situations like Pettersson's, where star-level, highest-paid players are struggling, there may be a question of effort. Can that be frustrating for other guys on the team and even make them not want to work as hard? It's an interesting question, because we kind of, you know, there was the whole Pettersson-Miller thing, and it's like, well, that can't be great for the room. That's got to be really difficult. Now, Miller's not there, but the struggles, just the very public, obvious, extended struggles of a star player, how difficult is that for everyone else in the room as well?
I imagine, like, honestly, I just think, like, at this point, everyone is just over having to talk about it.
Yeah.
Like,
he certainly is.
Like, Brock Besser is having to listen to this. Well, Brock Besser is also getting talked about if his, you know, if he's going to get re-signed, mm-hmm. is he going to be here still? Like, he's got enough to worry about while trying to play his own game. But you can't escape this story. Like, we're talking about it. I guarantee the show in the morning was talking about it.
Oh, yeah.
The show in the afternoon is going to talk. Like, it is what it is. That's the market. And, you know, it's sometimes, is it a bit much? Yeah, it is for sure. Especially now being on this side and seeing how much more I'm talking about this than I ever thought I would. And it's something, though, that you, like, you just kind of have to decide yourself that it's, like, it's done. You can't, not saying that he's a distraction, like trying to be, like, I see him before morning skates out there putting extra work. It looks like he's doing all the mm-hmm. right things. So there's definitely parts in the game where you see some of his effort and you're like, that was, you know, probably not his best. But there are lots of parts where you see his efforts there, but just nothing gets done. Like, he just doesn't look like that guy that's going to, you know, is not going to accept being told no to get the puck like he did, you know, a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. Like, there were certain points where, like, you could just see, you know, to whatever extent you could see the dog in him a bit of, like, this is my puck. I'm going to make something happen right now. And he would do it. And that level of whatever you want to call it is just not there.
Yeah, and I guess for the team, I mean, like, they all see what we see. You know, the coach sees what we see. Management sees what we see. It's just, it's so, even if we weren't talking about it all the time, I would think it would still be just weird at a basic level for the rest of the guys. You know what I mean? Like, not even that it would prevent them from playing well and all of that. But, like, how could it not be a distraction? To be like, you've watched, this isn't a slump. You know what I mean? This isn't like, oh, yeah, you know, he's got one goal in his last 15 games or whatever. Oh, he'll break out of it. He'll be fine. Like, something so different. It's so unique, I'm sure. Even for, like, you know, Tyler Myers, over 1,000 games. I don't think he's ever seen anything like this. You know what I mean? It's just such a bizarre situation.
Well, I mean, like, the hard part is, okay, like, I'll somewhat compare it to this, but they're not in the same spot. Like, you know, I played on some very bad teams. That, like, we're talking, like, out of playoffs, like, just after Christmas type of deal. And, you know, as I was, you know, younger on those teams, and being a younger guy and looking at, you know, the whoever was supposed to be the leaders and, you know, the guys scoring and all that, and you'd see some of their effort, or you'd see some just kind of how it was going. And you're sitting there thinking, like, man, I'm, like, literally doing everything I possibly can to make sure that my 11 minutes I get tonight are positive, and, like, I'm giving us as much as I can to help us win. And then you see it, you know, the big guys go out there and just kind of go through the motions. Like, it's hard because you're sitting there and you're like, if those guys don't go, like, we have no chance to win. I didn't think I was a bad player, but I'm like, I know I'm not taking this game over. Like, that's not happening. That's not in my wheelhouse. And for this Canuck team, like, you know, they're not a terrible team like the one I was just talking about, but, you know, it is a tough thing when you're doing your job and you're looking over, and whether the person you fully believe that they're giving everything they possibly have or not, it's hard because you can't separate like the guy from team success sometimes. And at this level, it's pro hockey, like team success is personal success. Like, you know, you're told from the time that you're, you know, in minor hockey, but it, especially when you get to junior, like teams want winners. And anytime that you can be on, like, we'll use Teddy Bluger as an example. Like, him being on those that Vegas team is a big reason of why he got the opportunity here and was able to grab it because he's a good player. But, like, that buys him a little more goodwill. Like, when we won the Calder Cup.
Like OAL, sorry to interrupt, yes, but no, winning exactly. The Cup with Florida, right? And then multi-year deal in Toronto.
Completely resurrected himself. But, like, we won the Calder Cup in Grand Rapids, Detroit's farm team. And, like, even our veteran American League guys were getting raises and a couple years on another American League team if they went somewhere else or back in GR. Like, just a winning pedigree or being around a winning team at whatever level, like, they want those people around. Like, it is a difference. So it's hard when you're looking at the guy that's supposed to be the one to be the game breaker, to be the one that can really kind of turn a game on its head, and it's just not there. Like, you're looking at it and, okay, well, if he's not going to do it, who's the next guy? And kind of goes back to what you were saying 46 minutes ago of, you know, like, who's next?
Yeah. It's hard. And, like, that's a hard role. You know what I mean? It's no slight. When I was saying, like, oh, Besser's a complimentary guy, it's not a slight on Brock Besser. He's a really, really good complimentary player. But there's only so many guys at the NHL level who are going to be, like, star-level drivers who are elevating their teammates. That's a very rare thing to find, and it's not Brock Besser. That's fine. You need guys like Besser to win, but it's going to look very, very different for those players, even if they're really good players like Besser, when they don't have the stars next to them.
Yeah, but the whole, you know, I say issue with Besser, and it's not an issue, but it is for right now. If someone's not getting him a puck for him to use that really good shot because he's a pure goal scorer, well, now, you know, like, we bring up, like, you know, how many goals does he have in the last while? Like, but if he's not, like, he lost JT Miller, who obviously those two played well together, and, you know, they had their struggles this year because Miller was having his, but again, like, it's just proving a point that he's a complimentary player, and he's a complimentary player that scored 40 goals. Like, it's not,
that's the thing.
Like, again,
that's
it's not slight.
It's not to be like, oh, he's a third line or anything. It's like, no, he's like Zach Hyman's a complimentary player, a really, really good one. Yeah,
exactly. So, like, for him, he's not getting the same type of deal that he has gotten in the past for line mates right now. And so you take away, well, now no one's feeding him in the same sense at the same volume. Well, now he's not scoring. So now it's not one player, but two players. And because he's not shooting at a bunch, you know, if he's on a line with, say, DeBrusk, whatever, Besser's not shooting because he can't get the puck. Well, now DeBrusk can't get rebounds off of Besser.
Yep.
You know, again, like, it's kind of going back to the defense talk. Like, it's all a chain reaction, but it all goes off of the driver. And if that driver's not behind the wheel, it's kind of a runaway train.
Yeah. All right. Quickly, we'll pause the PD stuff. We only got a few minutes or 5 minutes left or so here, but I do want to hit on a couple of other things quickly. First of all, Victor Mancini makes his Canucks debut last night, and I don't know, I thought it looked pretty good. I mean, the thing I like about it is just it's another guy who, compared to what they were rolling out in November and December, where it was a lot of guys who, you know, big, physical, but couldn't really move the puck very well, he brings that different dimension. You saw right away, right, his ability to skate with the puck. And for a, you know, guy with some size, that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I mean, like, his first puck touch, he goes flying up the middle. And it was almost kind of like the same as, you know, Elias Pettersson, like DPD, in his first couple games. But first couple shifts of, like, you know, he was physical. He was, you know, he's a powerful skater. He'd get, you know, he'd break up a play in the corner and then jump up the ice. And you're like, oh, well, that's kind of different than what we've seen, like you were just saying. And same with Mancini last night. Like, it's just a different element that they didn't have before. Like, you know, he needs a, you know, in my opinion, he needs a bit more time than what DP
sure.
is where he's at right now. But you can see the offense in him. You can see the willingness, not even willingness, but like the want to jump up. There was a couple times where, you know, in the, you know, very few moments of offensive zone possession where you could see him, you know, see the cycle happening and read it and jump through the middle and try and be an option, jumping through the middle while opening up ice behind. Like, those are all really good instincts. And as he gets a bit more seasoned, like, it's, you know, it looks like another really good player, you know, in the system. And the best part of that is, like, you can't just teach size and with a defenseman, especially, you can't teach size with offensive skill and skating ability. So like, you either have that ability or you don't. So for him, clearly he does. Like, to nurture that now and see what you can get him to is, you know, would be pretty exciting.
You mentioned DPD there as well, and, you know, he's continued to kind of carve out an everyday role, it looks like, getting a chance to play with Filip Hronek a little bit over the last two games. And the thing that stands out, because, yeah, it's the size and speed combination and maybe a little bit of secondary offense there from the blue line for DPD. But at such a young age, he just looks so confident being physically assertive. You know what I mean? That's what stands out to me, is there is no like, uh-oh, this is the NHL to his game at all. He's just like, no, I'm really big and strong, and I'm going to make really solid plays constantly along the boards in all three zones. What does that tell you just kind of about his future as a player, to see like no adjustment period for that side of his game coming up to the NHL?
Yeah, I mean, it's impressive. And, you know, going back to training camp, he came in, you know, other than the people that drafted him, you know, none of us really knew a ton sure. about him, and he had a fantastic camp. Then I went and did a couple Abbotsford games early in the year, and seeing him really play there, I was, you know, for a few months now, been really excited to see what he would look like when he comes up, because it just looked like a player that could jump in and play right away. And I didn't know if that was just me being a year and a half out of hockey and not having an idea, but you see him jump in, and it's, you know, it's that, you know, bashful, kind of youthful.
Yeah.
He's clearly excited in the position he is. He seems to understand the opportunity that's in front of him, and he's grabbing it. You know, I really enjoy the fact that he's not afraid to shoot the puck. You know, I think he's at 7 or 8 shots now, and, you know, he seems to be able to get...
It's more than the other Elias Pettersson.
How about that? And, you know, like, it's tough, though. Like, he's a young player, and for him, the physicality is, to me, I think, the key for him. I think whenever, because he's going to hit a slide,
yep.
just like every young player, but especially defensemen, when that hits, I think it'll be because of the physicality, it'll come off a little bit. Like, he wants to play a little more positional
sure.
and, you know, maybe try and be a bit more offensive, and the physicality will pull away a bit, and then he'll start losing his checks a bit. And they'll have to have a little video time and session talking about it. But, like, I think, I just think that physicality is the key to his game. It gets him engaged. It gets him, you know, you can see the fire build up in him a bit. And you can almost see after the first time he gets into a little pushing match, like, his game gets better. Like, he enjoys that side of it.
He's got that thing, too, where, man, when he takes somebody into the boards, it really looks like it hurts. Like, it looks different. You know what I mean?
Well, because there's some guys that, like, they go and hit, and it's shoulder to shoulder. They kind of bump each other, and they go their separate ways. And then there's the guys that hit.
Yes.
Like a Sherwood and like him, like, they're finishing through the boards. Like, they're not stopping at the hit. They're trying to put him into the first row. And, you know, it's one of those when you get hit really hard along the boards, when it's one that, you know, you're just kind of there, like, the boards almost just kind of give you a cushion, you bounce a little. But when it's hard enough and the guy's legs drive through you, so you've already, like, the momentum already put you into the boards and it's already kind of throwing you back in, it's like you get hit twice. And it's not fun. Like, it's a tough thing, and watching DPD do it is, like, you can see the fire in him. And again, like, that's what I like, is the enjoyment of the physicality.
Absolutely. It's been a blast to watch so far. Landon, fun as always, man. Really appreciate you taking the time to come in studio. We'll do it again soon.
Sounds good. We'll see you then.
That is Landon Ferraro. Drance will be back on the show tomorrow here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.